if a resident comes and has an attorney, now they may not have a case. Just because they have somebody representing them doesn't mean they have a case. But what they can do is probably prolong this issue out. And you do not want this thing prolonged, because the longer it goes, the more you're not getting paid. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Atlanta Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am your host, Spencer Sutton, and today we're going to talk about evictions. We are in the middle of one in our Atlanta office that has been taking some time, and really it's like the courts are so backed up that it's become a very painful process. And so I wanted to record this just so that you all, as landlords in the Atlanta area, whether you are or whether you're planning to be, just can just have a good idea about what to expect when you go through an eviction, the process, what it is step by step. Now, this is not legal advice. I'm not an attorney. So I want to make that this disclaimer. You need to find an eviction attorney, somebody who understands the law, who can walk you through this if you find yourself in this situation. Now, the hope is that you don't find yourself in this situation. And now, why would a resident need to be evicted? Like, what causes that? And there's just a number of things. It's very, very difficult to pinpoint why people need to go through an eviction process. Sometimes there are circumstances beyond their control. Let's just say there's a personal crisis in somebody's life. They lost their job, and they're unable to pay. They don't have any money to move. Let's say that they undergo a health issue and that keeps them maybe out of work or keeps them or just causes a major issue in their life. Could be a divorce. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen to people. That, guess what? You can't foresee these things in the underwriting process. There's no way that you can look at somebody's application. They could have fantastic credit. They could, you know, have great rental history, have a well-paying job, and then all of a sudden, life changes. And so life circumstances change, and it's a big, big problem for a landlord if somebody decides to stay in a property and not pay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you step by step through the process here in Georgia, and just so you can be well aware of what it takes. And again, this is not legal advice. And so let's just begin. And really, I want to break these down into steps. And so step one is really there must be a violation, right? So you have to understand there has to be some type of violation that you like make your case for. So I'm going to walk you through the three legal bases for evicting a resident. And there's really only two ways to lawfully eject a resident. And that's number one, with their consent or by court order. Right. So you can go to them, and if there's a breach of contract, a breach of the lease, you can ask them to leave and they can leave. And that's going to be their consent, or you have to take it to court. And so what we're doing is we're dealing with number two there, taking it to the court. And so you can't, like, you have to follow a process. This is not something that you can, you know, just, I'll tell you, I've had so many stories from the old days. And when I say the old days, when I, you know, back in the early 2000s, I mean, you have landlords, and if you own 100 houses in Atlanta and your property class is of choices, C class, D class, C minus, D class, this is where these things tend to get a little fuzzy for landlords, and they may start making decisions and start doing things that they should not be doing. So I want to warn you against that. Do not try to get somebody out of a house illegally. Now, there are plenty of ways that you can talk to a resident about getting out so that it becomes just by their own consent, right? So you can, everybody's probably heard of cash for keys. You know, I know plenty of friends of mine who have paid several hundred dollars in exchange for the keys, in exchange for them to move out. And it's just that simple. It avoids months more of vacancy. I mean, yeah, a vacancy or an eviction process of non-payment, then, you know, it speeds up the process, saves court fees, attorney costs. There's all kind of things that you can do to reduce that. So you can definitely do cash for keys, but let's just get straight into it. You do need to follow the process. So here we go. There's only three legal bases for evicting a resident. Number one, they're holding over the term of the lease, meaning the lease is up, the lease term is up, and they're staying in the property. So you can evict them for that. Number two, they fail to pay rent when it becomes due. Obviously, this is probably the biggest one that we see out there. And then third is, the resident is a tenant at will or at sufferance, right? And the landlord desires possession of the property back. And so the first two that I mentioned, which is the tenant's holding over and the tenant fails to pay rent, are pretty self-explanatory. This last one, the tenant is, they're a tenant at will or at sufferance, is, you know, it's really has to do with material breach of the lease, but they've refused to leave. Right. So what does that mean? What does it mean to have a material breach of the lease? Well, you need to know your lease. And in your lease, you probably have certain things that you could have no pets. You could have all kinds of things like that. On the lease, also, you're going to have who is supposed to live in the house. Who's supposed to live in the house? And so some of the things that are material breach of lease could be unauthorized pets in the home, unauthorized or unknown occupants in the home. Now, those two are probably very, very, very common. Like, I can't tell you how many times that people love their pets. And if they see a house and it says no pets, or maybe it says you can have one pet, they can't be over 15 pounds, and all of a sudden they have a Great Dane in the house or a German Shepherd, that is a material breach of the lease. Another one that we've seen in some areas is actually somebody living in the house that's not signed on the lease. And they do that because this person wouldn't qualify. They wouldn't qualify, but they're 100% going to live there. As a matter of fact, I remember a pretty funny story. We had somebody who left a one-star review, and they happened to mention the address in the review. And their name was right there on the Google review. So we pulled up the lease, and this person's name wasn't on the lease. This person's name who was saying, hey, we can't get a call back for a maintenance item. We've called this about this, blah, 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 blah. And so I responded to that review, and it may have been on Facebook. I can't really remember, but I responded to that review and I said, hey, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, I pulled up the lease. I can't find you on the lease. Did you sign the lease, or do you live in the house? And within 5 minutes, the comment was deleted. And I just thought it was hilarious. I thought it was so funny that somebody is, you know, they were living 100% living in that house without authorization. And it's a material breach of that contract. What else? Maybe they have significantly damaged the property. Maybe they've committed crimes in violation of the lease. Like, there's all kinds of things that would be a breach of the lease. So that's what those are the three reasons that you can, legal basis for evicting the resident. They're holding over the term of the lease. They fail to pay rent. And they're a tenant at will or at sufferance. In other words, there's a material breach of the lease. So let's answer a couple of questions that we get along the way here. People say, well, you know, let's just say the owner is not repairing something at the house. And what happens is the resident will say, well, I'm going to deduct the repairs. I had to go and fix this. I'm going to deduct the repairs from the rent paid and only pay you a part of the rent. You can't do that in Georgia. Like, it is the resident's obligation to pay the rent and the landlord's obligation to make the repairs. And guess what? They're independent of one another. You can't swap them out. And so a failure to repair doesn't, like, in any way mean that you can hold back rent from a resident standpoint. Instead, the resident is going to have to sue the landlord to recoup the money that they spent on the repair. So also, how long does this process take? Like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, right now in Atlanta, it's gotten extremely long. I was talking to somebody on our team in Chattanooga, and it's literally like 17 or 18 days in Atlanta. It's like they're way backed up, and it didn't used to be this long, but it's almost like we're still back in COVID and everything was shutting down and they were going through things very, very slowly. There's a massive backlog. So I would say, how long does it take to evict somebody in Georgia in general? It's typically 14 days to 2 to 3 months. But at present, as I'm recording this, it's much, much longer. Another question that a landlord may be asking is, can I turn off utilities if the tenant doesn't pay rent? And you cannot do that. You will be fined if you do that. And a really, really interesting story. So I remember back at a RIA club meeting back in the day, there was a gentleman. This guy was, you know, he was super, super old school. He had a lot of houses that were D-class properties. And he actually got up there and was talking about a couple of things that he did that were completely against the law, right? And so you're saying, hey, can I turn off utilities or can I change locks if they don't pay the rent? And you can't do that. But let me tell you what this guy was doing. This guy was actually going to the house and taking the front door off the house. He was literally removing the front door, putting it in his truck and driving away. Other things that he would do is he would go up on top of the house and stick, I want to say, tennis balls in the vents for like the vents for sewer or whatever, that so you couldn't get any kind of ventilation in the bathrooms. And it was, so he would use all kinds of different ways to get people out of these houses. And you just can't do that. Like, you cannot do that. And so just remember that you have to absolutely follow the book. So what is the next step? So once you've determined, step one is determining a violation. So I gave you the three violations. Step two is a demand for possession. Now, this is a very, very important part of the process. So unless you've first made a demand for possession, you can't file an eviction, right? And so you have to create a document, and the document needs to be very, very clear, saying that they're in breach of the contract. And, you know, it just needs to be, it doesn't need to be a special form or anything like that, but it just needs to be very clear. It needs to be very concise. And you must give the resident a reasonable opportunity to voluntarily surrender the premises. Or if they're not paying rent, to get caught up. Now, this is where for a lot of people, it just kind of, it's an ebb and flow. If you're in the middle of a, you know, where you go and put the notice on the door or hand the notice to the person, and then all of a sudden they come and pay partial rent that next day or that day, then you have a decision. If you're accepting that rent, then you've got to start the whole process over again. So you need to decide, are you going to go through with the entire eviction, or are you going to try to get this person caught up? Now, in my opinion, we always want to help people get caught up. We understand that people, there may be difficult times that somebody goes through. And so we always want to see if we can work something out. Is there a payment plan that we can do to get somebody caught up and on the right track? This is probably best for the owner, because it saves them money on an expensive eviction process, and it's going to be probably best for the resident. They don't have an eviction on their, you know, on their record, which they do not want that, I can promise you. So you have to have a demand for possession. Number three is, then after you've done that, it's really straightforward. You've got to file and serve what's called a dispossessory affidavit. Right. So the landlord, the agents, if you have a property management company like Evernest, or your attorney, needs to make a sworn affidavit And this is a document that's signed by a notary and that identifies the resident. Which of the three reasons for the eviction are you're claiming, and states that a demand for the possession has been made and the tenant has refused to leave, alleges any amounts due. So you need to be very, very clear about the amounts due. And that's it. So that's what you have to do. And so the affidavit along with the summons needs to be served to the tenant either personally or tacked and mailed. All right. So you need to serve that to the resident. This is a sworn affidavit. Okay. So this is an official document. And so from that point, that's step three. Step four is a default judgment or trial. So if the resident fails to answer within 7 days of being served, the landlord is entitled to a default judgment and a writ of possession. So this is very, very important. So if the resident fails to answer within 7 days, you're going to get this default judgment. So if the tenant answers and demands a trial, then guess what? You're going to go to trial. And so that's it. So really, a lot of times people don't show up and don't fight it. And maybe they've already moved out. I would just also tell you kind of some advice. Pay very, very close attention to the property during this process, because when they start seeing things snowball and when they get served, they may decide, hey, I need to move out of here and get out of here. And because I know that the landlord is very, very serious at this point. So, but if the resident answers and demands a trial, then you're going to go to trial. And essentially, you're going to get to state your case before the judge. And sometimes residents show up. Sometimes they don't even bother to show up. And in some cases, a resident's going to show up and hire an attorney. So you need to be very, very certain about what your eviction grounds are, and you need to have your attorney present, you know, and to be there with you, to walk through this whole thing with you, you know. But the truth is, if a resident comes and has an attorney, now they may not have a case. Just because they have somebody representing them doesn't mean they have a case, but what they can do is probably prolong this issue out. And you do not want this thing prolonged, because the longer it goes, the more you're not getting paid. And that's just not what we want. And so the best thing probably, if it gets to this, you know, length or this far in the process, is that the resident doesn't show up and you get a default judgment. Because then what's going to happen is the resident can vacate the property. Like, they can return the keys after on the eighth day of judgment, and then you can go and change the locks, or they can not vacate the property. And if they don't vacate the property and they don't file an appeal, then you can get a writ of possession and have the sheriff set them out. And so that's really how it goes. So again, they can do one of three things. They can vacate the property, and then after the eighth day, on the eighth day of the judgment, you can go and change the locks. Or they can not vacate the property, or they can file an appeal. Now, if they don't vacate the property, then if they have that eviction judgment ordering them to vacate and they don't leave, then what you're going to do is file a writ of possession with the clerk of court. And this is essentially getting the marshal or the sheriff to go out to the property and remove the resident. They're going to be forcibly set out if they don't leave themselves. You know, what'll happen is the official will drive to the property, put a note on the door announcing the date that they're going to be set out. And you'll also know the date that they're going to be set out, because you're going to need to get your things in order and be ready to be there when this happens. Now, I went through this in Alabama. In Birmingham, Alabama, at one point, I walked through the entire process myself. It was just such a pain in the neck. It took me 3 or 4 months. But I can tell you, I was there and I was ready when the sheriff came. And the sheriff actually came, and they had vacated that morning. And the sheriff came and I want to say took stuff out to the street. Now that doesn't happen in every case. And at that point when I was there, there were neighbors that were coming and taking stuff. So it was kind of really, really interesting to watch, but that's what'll happen. And then at that point, you need to change locks. Now, having said all that, I just described the entire process to you. And what is the best solution? The best solution is, okay, there's three things you can do to mitigate the risk of this happening. And I would say number one is you need to be very, very clear and tight on your screening process. Be very, very clear and very tight on your screening process. So the best defense is to put the right resident in the home. But as I mentioned before, it's not just about the resident. You can have a fantastic person in there, but they just fall on hard times. And so the second thing you can do to mitigate this is try to reach an agreement. Try to reach a way for them to get caught back up. So if you find that your resident is falling behind on rent, how can you create a payment plan that is going to get them caught back up? I would highly, highly encourage you to work through that. It's in your best interest and it's in their best interest. And then third thing you can do is you could, if they can't get caught up and they're, you know, there's no way they can get caught up, they can't pay this back, the next best thing you can do is to reach an agreement where they actually leave the property without going through an eviction. And again, like most really great residents, if you place a great resident in there, they don't want this eviction on their record because it's going to follow them for years when people are pulling, if they ever want to rent again. So try to reach an agreement where you exchange the keys for something else, something of value, whatever the case is. Just try to reach an agreement where they're able to, where they're willing to leave the property. So that is it. That's the walkthrough of the eviction process in Atlanta. I really do hope that you don't have to go through anything like this and that all of your rental properties are fantastic and they have great cash flow and you have happy residents who are getting a fantastic house and it all works out. That's the best case scenario. But if you rent enough houses, you're going to go through probably a little bit of trouble at some point or another. So, all right, everybody, that's it. We'll be back next month with another episode of the Atlanta Real Estate Investor Podcast.